when we read together in the book of Malachi. Now this verse occurs in the back of the brochure for the conference. I thought we'd have a look at it tonight. Malachi chapter 3 and verse 16. Then they that feared the Lord speak often one to another. And the Lord hearkened and heard it. And the book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Lord and that thought upon his name. And God allowed his blessing to the reading of his word. Encouragement in a dark day was found for this people in a threefold way. First of all, it was found in a kindred spirit. They feared the Lord. Secondly, it was found in a mutual fellowship. They spake often one to another. And thirdly, it was found in an assured recognition. The Lord heard, and a book of remembrance was written. Now it's no different in the day in which you and I live. Encouragement in a day that's dark can still be found in those three ways that they found it, in a very dark day in the book of Malachi. You know the background. You know the questions that were being asked and answered by those who were flouting the word of God and the things of God. Wherein have we robbed thee? What pleasure is there in working for God? And in a day like that, these folks found their encouragement amongst the folks that had the same attitude and the same heart of reverence towards their God. They had a kindred spirit. You see, they didn't find their encouragement in linking with the men that were rebelling. They found their encouragement in meeting together, absolutely divorced from what these men were teaching and practicing. And they found their encouragement like a Peter of old and others when it says of Peter released from prison. It says he went to the house of Mary. It says of them in Acts 4, after they were released from the hands of the governors, it says they went to their own company. That's where they found their help. And that's where you and I will find them, amongst the people of God. They had a uniting force. What was it? They all feared the Lord. They were a separated people to God. They had a reverential fear for God. They had come to know their God. And they revered his person. And they had a desire to please him. Oh, they weren't in a state like David was in a day gone by when he was afraid of God. Oh, no. They knew what it was to live close to God. But they knew what it was to treat God with a reverential fear that was worthy of his name. So they were separated to it. And so we can find like them, first of all, even in these days we are together, we can find like them an encouragement by gathering together with those who have a kindred spirit, who've come to know Him, to revere His name, and have a desire to do His will. Let us have grace, whereby we may serve God acceptably, with reverence and godly fear, for our God is a consuming fire. But then they found their encouragement in a second thing. It says they speak often one to another. In other words, they were encouraged not only by companying with those of a kindred spirit, but they were encouraged by coming together. By coming mutually together and finding fellowship one with another in the things of God. They speak often one to another. You notice they did it with frequency. They did it often. They did it often. The oftener they did it, the more they enjoyed the company. And the oftener they did it, the more they were encouraged to go on in the things of God by coming together like this. And so we find that when we turn to the New Testament, there they are, they're encouraged in the same way, coming together around the Word of God to be taught, coming together to break bread and remember Him, coming together to pray, coming together to preach the gospel. There was that mutual fellowship one with the other in seeking to do the work of God. And so, be like them. Not only can be encouraged in those of a kindred spirit separated from the world and separated from that that would seek to spread insidious doctrine, but encouraged by doing the same things together, by speaking one with another about God and the things of God and the things of Christ, and learning from that to be that that finds encouragement in the work of God. So, they found a mutual fellowship in doing it often, in working and in communing and worshipping together in the things of God. May we find that in the days in which we are together, not only with those of a kindred spirit, but in doing the things of God together and communing together in His things. But then, they found an encouragement in another thing. You know, when things are dark and difficult with the people of God, they're looking for something that gives them an assurance that they're doing the right thing, that they're moving in the right way for God. When everything else around them is such that they feel that there is no encouragement and there's nobody else seem to be carrying on the way that God would expect, and a few of them are doing it together, God always would remind them that they're not alone. God always would remind them that He has others who are doing the same thing. Elijah had that problem. He thought he was the only man that was being faithful for God. And God had to tell him, he says, I've got 7,000, but I've never bowed the knee. But then they can find their encouragement not only on the fact that there are others doing it, they can find their encouragement in what God has to say to them, and how God reminds them of what He's doing. So these folks were thirdly encouraged by this fact, that they knew that God heard them. And they were encouraged by an assured recognition that in their faithfulness, God was hearing them. And more than that, God was assuring them He wouldn't forget. He was recording it in His book. You see, He knows. He hears. He's in perfect recognition of what's going on. There's nothing misses Him. There's nothing that is done for Him that He doesn't recognize. He knows all the conditions. It's interesting to notice that the little word that verse 16 starts with is the word then. And that takes us back to what's before it. And what's before it is the terrible conditions that were prevailing And he says, then, in that very condition, he says, the Lord heard. He knew what was going on. And it's encouraging to the people of God and their faithfulness to know that he knows what's going on. But secondly, it's encouraging to know that he's recognizing it. He's writing it down. It says that he heard and a book of remembrance was written. It was written down. They were assured that God was remembering what they were doing. You remember what it says in the Hebrew letter? It says he's not unrighteous to forget your work of faith and your labor of love. And what's done for him is never forgotten. He assures us of recognition and reward for things that we do for him in the way of building into the assembly of God, as he says in 1 Corinthians 3. Of the little things that are done in secret, that nobody knows anything about, that one day he's going to bring out into the open. Of the things that were done with the true and pure motive, the things that were from the heart. And of the things that were done in a conduct that was to his glory. He says that he would recognize things done through the body, whether they were good or profitable. And we find that he not only would recognize these things, but he recognizes when we take identification with those who are despised and persecuted and neglected. And he says, as he said way back in Matthew's Gospel, in the great prophecy of Olivet, he said this. He said, I was hungered and I was thirsty, and I was a stranger and I was naked, and you took me in. And they said, when did we do that, Lord? He said, inasmuch as you did it to the least of these, my brethren, you did it unto me. Inasmuch as you did it to the least of these, my brethren, you did it unto me. He recognizes that that's done in identification with the persecuted. He writes it all down. He's going to reward it someday in the way that he knows best to do it. But he also recognizes what's done for him that's misunderstood by others round about. You remember the woman with her alabaster box of ointment as she poured it upon his head and upon his feet? You remember what it says? Some of them said, why was this waste of the ointment made? It could have been sold for 300 pence and given to the poor. You see, they completely misunderstood what she was doing. You know what he said? He gives her the greatest commendation that anybody could ever get. And remember, the greatest commendation the Lord gave on earth was given to two women, not to men at all. One of them was to a woman that cast in two mites into an offertory box. And he says of her, he says she's cast in more than the last. And the other is given to this woman that broke her alabaster box of ointment. And he says this to her, because she done what she could. Now you and I can do no more than that. You and I can do nothing more than that. It says she did what she could. And so we find she got the greatest commendation that's ever possible to get from the risen Christ. She did what she could. And so we find that in being misunderstood by others, he didn't misunderstand her. He knew exactly what she was doing. He knew why she was doing it. And he was the one who gave her the commendation while men misunderstood completely. You see, his encouragement to the people of God is this. He knows and he writes it for the day that's to be brought to the reckoning. And so may we, over these days and in the days that lie ahead of us, find encouragement in a dark day in the same way as they found in the fact that we meet together with those that we also do a continual mutual fellowship of worshipping and working together, speaking often one to another. And thirdly, that we find encouragement by an assurance of God's recognition and ultimate reward. Then they that fear the Lord speak often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard it. And the book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Lord and that thought upon his name. May the Lord bless his life. prophecy of Isaiah and in chapter 40. Verse 28. Hast thou not known? Hast thou not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary? There is no searching of his understanding. He giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might he increaseth strength. Even the youths shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall, but they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. May God add his blessing to the reading of his word. Here's a company of people that had a trying experience in the days of Sennacherib and were now looking out to the future with much apprehension because they had been told that Babylon was now about to come. And they're looking for where they can find comfort and consolation and strength to meet the future. And the chapter 40 of this book, as you all know, starts the second section of the book as a comfort to such a people. And as you go through the two chapters, 40 and 41, here is presented to us much of the character of God in relation to his people. He's presented as the creator. He's presented as the sovereign. He's presented as incomparable. He's presented as unfailing. And he's presented as the eternal God. Now the verses we've read together present to us the unfailing character of God in relation to the circumstances of his people. He starts with a challenge. Have you forgotten? Do you not know? Have you forgotten who I am? Have you forgotten what your God's like? Have you forgotten what he can do? I wonder if we're there today. The circumstances, some of them we've been listening to from our brother Tom, are beginning to get down and beginning to press upon us. Do we need to be reminded of the kind of God that we have? Do we need to be reminded of the God that we trusted? Do we need to be reminded of what he can do? Corinth found themselves in that position. You remember that 10 times over, Paul had to say this to them. Know ye not? Know ye not? Know ye not? Have you forgotten? You remember again, Peter in the second epistle we're looking at is keeping reminding the people of God of what their God can do, of what he's like. And you remember the writer to the Hebrews would do the same thing. He would bring them to a position to remember the former days. To remember when they made progress in divine things. To remember when their God was a reality to them. They're now being pointed out. The words that the prophet uses to this people is 3 simple words. Behold, your God. Behold your God. As God would challenge them, he starts to remind them of certain things. He would remind them of who he is. 3 things he states about who he is. He says, he's the everlasting God. He says, he's the Lord. He says, he's the creator of the ends of the earth.
Are we living in a day when we need to be reminded who our God is? That He's the everlasting God. He's the one without beginning of days and without end of life. He's the one who brought all, who is before all things, and by Him all things consist. He's the one who has neither beginning of days nor end of life. He's the God of eternity. He's the everlasting God. Three times over, Isaiah reminds this people of the everlasting character of their God. He reminds them three times in the book. He's the first, and He's the last. There's none before Him. There's none after Him. He's the first and the last. But then they needed to be reminded that He was the Lord. He was Jehovah. That He was still in control. That He was the God that still held all things in the palm of His hand. That controlled all things by His power. That He was sovereign, supreme, and control in the universe of men. Do you believe that today? Do you believe your God is still Lord of creation? That He's the Lord of the universe? That He's still in control? He would remind His people today that He is still the Lord. He's the one in control. Then He reminds them of something else. He reminds them of His creatorial power. He's the one who could say, I'm not only first and last. He's the one who could say, I'm Alpha and Omega. That is, I am the originator of all things. And I am the consummator of all things. I'm the one that will bring them all to an end and bring in a new heaven and a new earth. He's the Lord. He's the Creator. He's the everlasting God. This afternoon, He would remind you and me, He's still the same. He's still the Lord. Do we need to be reminded in our circumstances? Then He does something else. And in verses 28 to 29, He then reminds them of His unfailing character. Not only who He is, but His unfailing character. And He does that in a fourfold way. He reminds them, first of all, that He fainteth not. That simply means that He never fatigues. He never gets to the stage that he has to give up and His power's beginning to wane. He's unfailing in His power. Unfailing in His power. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He's the one that James uses a terminology from the world of the astronomer, and he says this, there is no variableness with God. What does he mean? He means that when they look through their telescope and they see what they call parallax, that is, one time they're there, but He's over there, they say, your God's never like that. You'll never find your God in a position that you didn't think He was in. He'll always be there the same. Yesterday and today and forever. There is no changing of position with your God, he says. There is no variableness with God. He's able to save to the uttermost. He's got unfailing power. Ah, but it says something else. It says, neither is he weary. Neither is he weary. That is, he is not only unfailing in his power, he's unfailing in His availability. He never sleeps. He that keepeth Israel slumbers not nor sleeps. He's never exhausted, the word means. Never exhausted. You'll never go and find God sleeping. That's what Elijah said about Baal, remember in 1 Kings. He says to them, as he tested them and tempted them, he says, maybe he's gone to sleep. Give him a good shout, he says. Waken him up. He's maybe gone to sleep. Ah, says God, your God never wearies. Your God never becomes exhausted. And James uses the rest of the terminology. And he says this. He says there's no variableness with him. I says more than that, he says. There's no shadow caused by turning. Now he's using terminology from the same realm, the realm of the astronomer. And what's he saying? He says there is no eclipse of the moon with God. You'll never go and find him shut out as they do at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know. And they go to look for the eclipse of the moon and they see it shut off. He says you'll never get that with God. There your God has unfailing availability. Doesn't matter when you go. He says, you'll find me. I'll be there, he says. He never wearies. He never becomes exhausted. And so the writer to the Hebrews says that in such a condition, here's the God that you've got. He says, you can have boldness to enter through the blood of Jesus. Let us draw near. But he says more than that. He says, we can come boldly to the throne of grace to obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need, or better still, for timely help, the help that's needed for the occasion. He says, do I need to remind you? I'm the unfailing God. I'm unfailing in my position as the one who never faints. Unfailing in my power. But he says, I'm also unfailing in my availability. He says, I never weary. You'll always find me there. You'll always find me available. But he says more than that. He says, he's the one, there is no searching of his understanding. You see, he's reminding them, he's the all-knowing God. He's unfailing in his knowledge. He knows the end from the beginning. He's the one who knoweth what things we have need of before we ask. As he looks down there in the book of the Revelation, it becomes something of an eye-opener to you and me as we look through that book and see the kind of things he knows about. You know, sometimes we do things in the assembly and we think he doesn't know. He's reminding us today. He's got unfailing knowledge. He knows it all. He knows all that's going on. He tells them in Ephesus. He tells them all about their departing from their first love. He knows Smyrna's tribulation. He knows Pergamos, where it dwelleth, where Satan's seat is. He knows the conditions under which his people are operating. He's perfectly aware of them all. He knows exactly what's involved. He knows the conditions that they're operating under. And you know, because he knows everything, he can act in relation to that circumstance. Come to the man in 1 Kings 19, and you see the God that's unfailing in his knowledge, dealing with a man that's running from a woman. And he's telling God, Lord, I'm the only one that's left. God's to remind him there's 7,000 that have never bowed the knee to Baal. Says God to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? Why are you here? God starts to speak to him, and he speaks in the wind. He comes with the wind. He wasn't there for Elijah, this guy. And he comes in the fire. That's not what Elijah needed this time. And he comes in the earthquake, and that's not what Elijah needed this time. Oh yes, he had known the God of the fire. He'd seen him in the chapter before. He had known the God of the wind. He'd seen him in the chapter before. He had known the God of the earthquake. Yes, there had been an earthquake on that very, very place where he stood when God gave the law by Moses. He says, I know all about that God. That's not the God he needed. The God that was all-knowing needed exactly the kind of approach he needed for the servant of that day. And he says he came in a still small voice. And God heard him. And he heard God. And he got the very thing he needed for the occasion. Why? Because he had a God who was unfailing in his knowledge. Unfailing in his knowledge. He knew the end from the beginning. He knew it exactly. He acts in the light of his knowledge to his people. He fails not. What does it say in Romans 8?
It says, we know not what we should ask, but the Spirit maketh intercession for us with groanings which cannot be uttered. So we find he's unfailing in his knowledge. Ah, but says God, there's something else I want you to know. Something else I want you to remember. He says, I'm not only unfailing in my power, unfailing in my availability, unfailing in my knowledge. He says, I'm unfailing in my provision. What does he say? He says, he giveth. He giveth. Here's the unfailing resources of God for his people. Unfailing in his giving. In giving power, as he says, to the weak, to the faint, and to those that have no might, he increaseth strength. Unfailing in his giving. You see, the God that never wearies can deal with the folks that are weary. And the God that never faints can deal with the folks that are fainting. He is the God that is unfailing in his giving. He can reach them wherever they are. So he's reminded them. He says, I want you to remember, I'm unfailing and in my giving, unfailing in my knowledge, my availability, and my power. Ah, but he says, I want you to remember something else. And so we find in verse 30, he says this to them. He says, even the youth shall faint. And he says, the young men shall utterly fall. He says, and my provision has a superiority over all the others. He says, I want to remind you now of the superiority of my unfailing provision. He says, the very vigor of youth, what will happen to it? The very vigor of youth, he says, shall faint and be weary. That is, it shall lose power and be fatigued. And he says more than that, he says, the choicest of men will utterly fall. That is, they shall be completely exhausted. Why? Because they're moving within the strength and the vigor of flesh. They're moving within the strength and the vigor of their own power. And says God, my provision is superior to the vigor of strength of youth and men. He says, their provision gets you into a mess. He says, my provision doesn't get you. God's provision for his people is so superior. They never weary and they never lose strength if they lay hold on his provision for the circumstances. So we find that this very thing God is saying is a reminder to all our hearts today that natural vigor is not synonymous with spiritual power, or sometimes we think it is. Natural vigor is not synonymous with spiritual power. What did Paul say? Paul says, we have no confidence in the flesh. Paul says, I renounce them all as awful. What for? That I may win Christ. I might gain Christ as a prize. He recognized where his power lay. He recognized where he could find the resources that he needed. He recognized the superiority of the provision of God for his people. It was beyond what men could do. It's beyond human power. And sometimes we're doing it all in the power of the flesh. And if we'd only lean upon him, we'd find we could do it an awful lot better. Ah, but he says more than that. He says, here's how to avail yourself of the unfailing God. How can I avail myself of a God like this in my circumstances? How am I going to be able to carry on? How can a God like this help me? Ah, he says, in contradistinction to the young men, and in contradistinction to those youths, he says, there's a but of distinction. What is it? This is but they that wait upon the Lord. They that wait upon the Lord. Here's how they're going to avail themselves of his unfailing provision. of the unfailing God that they've got. Here's how they're going to do it. They're going to wait upon Him. Wait upon Him. Now what does that mean? Well, first of all, it means this. That I'm prepared to trust Him. That I'm prepared to live by faith. That I'm prepared by like a Habakkuk of old, when I couldn't understand what He was doing, I'm still prepared to live by faith. That's the first step in waiting upon God. The just shall live by faith. Not by the logic of the human mind. Not by trying to work it all out and with mathematical precision. The only way that we can do it is by a simple trust in God. A simple faith in God. That's the first thing. Ah, but the second thing is this. Not only does it mean that I have to put my faith and my trust in Him, even though I can't understand what He's doing, but I trust Him. But it means I've got to wait His time. I've got to wait His time. I've got to make sure He's with me. I've got to make sure He's leading the way. I've got to make sure that I'm not running in front of God. You know, that's where Abraham made the mistake, isn't it? And all the problems in the Middle East today would never have existed if Abraham hadn't tried to give God a hand to do what he was going to do. And Abraham thought he could work out the method by which the Son would come. And he worked it all out. And all he did was create havoc. Why? Because he wouldn't wait God's time. He wouldn't wait God's time. He wouldn't wait to know how God was leading him. You remember, you come into the New Testament. And here's the great apostle coming to the Acts of the Apostle. And he says this. We essayed to go into Bithynia. Well, that's very good. He had it all worked out. Even the great apostle had it all worked out. What he was going to do. Then he adds this. But the Spirit suffered us not. He was prepared, even in his calculations, to stop them when God showed him that that's not what he wanted him to do. Here's another man. We've been talking about him already this afternoon. In the book of Judges, here's Gideon. God's got a job for him to do. God's got something that he wants Gideon to do. He wants him to destroy the Midianites, to bring his people out from the bondage of them. And Gideon listens carefully. Then Gideon says this. He says, Lord, will you make the fleece wet and the ground dry? God did it. Then he says, Lord, will you make the ground wet and the fleece dry? God did it. What was he doing? Now don't try some fanciful interpretation. It's something very simple. He was just making doubly sure he had God with him before he went. You and I do that? Oh, we make our arrangements. We're all guilty of it. We make our arrangements. We get it all worked out. We've got all the administrative abilities that we've gained by management and all the rest of it. And we can work it all out. And then we say to God, are you coming? That's not waiting upon the Lord. To wait upon the Lord just to know that He's leading. To wait upon the Lord just to know that He's guiding. To wait upon the Lord just to wait His time and be sure He's with us before we move. That's when we make the mistakes. When we move out thinking we've got Him when we haven't. But then there's a third way in which we wait upon Him. You find them doing it time and time again in the Acts of the Apostles. It says, when they had prayed, the place was shaken where they were assembled together. They knew what it was to lay hold upon God in prayer. They knew what it was to come before God in true believing prayer and lay hold upon Him. So we find, how do I wait upon Him? I first of all know what it is to trust him. Secondly, I know what it is to wait his time. I don't go in front of him. Thirdly, I know what it is to lay hold upon him in prayer. Ah, but there's a fourth thing in the New Testament. Here's a man got saved. He was brought up at the feet of Gamaliel. He had there sat time and time again, and he was tuitioned and taught in all the land, the learning of the land. You and I would in our day would say he sat at the feet of a very eminent professor. He got saved. What happened? What does he do? Listen to what he says. He says, immediately, I conferred not with flesh and blood. What does that mean? It simply means this. He says, I didn't go back to Gamaliel. I didn't go back to Gamaliel. I didn't go now to get taught by Gamaliel or the things of God. He says, I didn't even go up to the brethren at Jerusalem. He says, I went down into Arabia. I went down into Arabia. Young man, I want to ask you this afternoon, do you know anything of being in Arabia with your God? That's how you'll avail yourself of the unfailing God and all his power. If you know what it is to get alone with your God, to confer with your God, to allow God to speak to you through his word. Oh yes, we can be very busy. We can be really occupied in doing work for the Lord. But remember, it can be not the work of the Lord. Work for the Lord is what I want to do. The work of the Lord is what he wants me to do. Here we find Paul. He says, I'm waiting upon him. I'm conferring with him. He knew what it is to sit in his presence. He knew what it is to get alone with God. He knew what it was to study, what to do, to rightly divide the word of truth, to know exactly what God was saying to him. So you and I, in our problems, in our difficulties, in not knowing where to go in the days of perplexity, and God would remind us of his unfailing character, and he's saying now to us, here's how you can know me. Here's how you can know me. You can know me by prayer, by getting alone with me. You can know me by making sure I'm leading the way. You can know me by trusting me. Then he says to them, here's what's going to happen. To the man that's prepared to wait upon his God in the circumstances, to the man that knows something about the unfailing character of God and he avails himself of it, what's going to happen? Ah, he says, four things will happen. Number one, he says, you will renew your strength. That means you'll get fresh strength from day to day. Fresh vigor to carry on. That is in contradistinction to the young man in the verse before. It says, you'll never become fatigued like the youths. If you know what it is to wait on your God. Secondly, he says this, you will mount up with wings as eagles. Now I believe that simply means this, that you'll be able to surmount the problems. You'll be able to get over the problems. You'll have the power to overcome that the problems that are facing you. You will overcome the obstacles. What does he say in the Philippian letter? He says this. He says, be careful for nothing. But in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. And the peace of God shall garrison your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Oh, he doesn't promise to take you out of the problem, but he promises to get you through. He promises to get you through. He promises to see his people through the problem. He says he's the God that will renew their strength. He'll give them fresh strength, and he'll help them to mount up with wings as eagles. That is, to know fellowship with God, and to know communion with God. and to know the power of God to overcome. Know His powerfulness to overcome. That means that they will not utterly fall. Oh yes, the young men are going to utterly fall. But this is the man that waits on his God. He says, he's going to mount up. He's not going to fall. He will mount up with wings as eagles. Then he says, the third thing that will happen is this. He says, you will be that that will not, you will run and not be weary. You will run and not be weary. That is, you will run and not become exhausted. You will run and not become exhausted. You will know consistent, energetic effort in God's service. This is the kind of thing Paul knew about. Paul could say, having received help of God, I continue unto this day. He could tell us, I can do all things through Christ who is constantly pouring strength into me. He could tell Timothy, you can be instant in season and out of season. He says you can be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding. He could tell Timothy, you can be instant in season and out of season. He says you can be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. And as the writer writes to the Hebrews, he says to them, cast not away therefore your confidence with a great recompense of reward. He says, don't give up. He says, the man that waits on his Lord, the man that waits on the Lord, what can he do? He says, he can have energetic service, energetic effort in the service of God. He'll never become exhausted if he's waiting on his Lord, if he knows what it is to lean on Him. He will be able to carry on to the end. Not to give up, as we've been hearing, but to keep going on to the end, and at the end be able to say, like the apostle, I have fought a good fight. I have kept the faith. I have finished the course. Why did he do it? How did he do it? Simply by waiting on his Lord. By waiting on his Lord. By waiting on Him, he was able to run and not be weary. Ah, but more than that, he says you'll also walk and not faint. You'll walk and not wane in your power. You'll not become less effortless, put out less effort. You'll walk and not faint. That is, you will be that will still be making steady progress in the ways of God. Oh yes, if I'm running and not being weary, it's the service of God I trust that's in view. When it comes to walking and not being weary, it's keeping going consistently in the ways of God. How can I do it? By waiting on my God. What did Paul say to young Timothy? He said this to him. He says, look, Timothy, look what's going on round about you. Look at the conditions. Lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Having a form of godliness and denying the power thereof. He says, what have you to do? He says, you have to continue in the things that you left and been assured of. You don't go and join them. You don't go and be one of them. Oh no, he says, Timothy, you carry on in what God taught you. You know what it is to walk and not faint, to keep going on in the truth that God taught you. You know, it's easy to give up if you've no conviction about it. It's when you've got a conviction about a thing that you're prepared to carry on for God in it. Here's the idea behind this verse. They that wait upon the Lord, what will they do? They will walk and not faint. They'll keep going on amidst all that's round about them. They'll be keeping going on in the ways that God taught them. And they will make a steady, progressive growth, as we heard about this morning. A growth that's not stinted. A growth that's not unbalanced. But a growth that's progressive and steady and balanced in the things of God, because they waited upon their God. Ah, so, there's the problem. There's a future that you don't know about, that you're apprehensive about. God says, do I need to remind you who I am? God says, do I need to remind you of my unfailing character? He says, do you need to be aware of the superiority of the provision I'm prepared to give you? Are you prepared to avail yourself by waiting upon the Lord? For he says this, if you do that, you'll renew your strength. You'll mount up with wings as eagles. You'll run and not be weary. You'll walk and not be. May we know something of the unfailing God in our circumstances, in the days in which we live. May the Lord bless his life.